morning. Today is Friday, June the 12th, 168th day of the new year. Joining us this morning is Humble Bay Fire Chief Ken Woods.
Good morning.
You know, sometimes those before the show conversations get us excited and happy, and other times
maybe not.
You get
not
good
so
morning.
Much. Not so much. Yeah.
Our quote this morning comes from Mark Twain. Man's the only animal that blushes, or needs to.
Or needs to, right. Good one.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. So, coming close to a budget year, we've heard discussions.
Yeah.
Heard discussions over the last, what, 6 weeks now? Six, 7 weeks or so,
right,
that things were kind of squirrely.
Right.
What's it look like for a fire in, well, I guess in 3.5 weeks?
Not good. It's not good within the city, on the city side particularly, and we're going to have to make some major changes in the resources we provide, where we staff. We're looking at potentially browning out a station for much of the year, potentially even closing that station based on the funds that are going to be available. So it's going to be a big change for not only us and how we deliver service, but also the community in the Myrtletown area.
Is it a matter of us just going, okay, it's going to take a little bit longer, and just accepting that it's going to take a little bit longer? Does that take some of that pressure out?
It's not only that, but couple that with then you remove a fire resource, a fire engine, and when we have a number of calls at one time, we have one less resource to send to those calls. So at times, it's going to be much longer to get someone if someone shows up. So that's really the problem for us. How do we handle the call volume? Because time matters, and we're just going to have to try to figure out the best way to provide service with, it appears, one less resource.
In the past, we've talked about how many of your responses are, let's say, not traditionally fire-related,
right,
responses.
Yeah.
Whether it's going to an encampment that is a situation, or help me, I've fallen.
Right.
Things that don't require fire guys. Has there been any thoughts to either having somebody under the roof that isn't a fire guy?
Yeah, they're, you know,
doing that kind of
we've
structural?
We have thought about that over time. And again, the biggest bang that we get is we have a person on duty that can do a number of different things, as opposed to hiring somebody that would just go to a medical call type thing. Because when the call comes in, we don't know what it's going to be. So even though, you know, 63-64% of our calls are medical, that next call could be a structure fire in Old Town, where you have to have the bodies and you have to do a number of things to put that fire out quickly, or it's going to spread. And the potential is to have a big fire, and that's what we're trying to avoid.
And the response time is a factor into that equation.
It's a huge factor in there as well, exactly. As that fire grows and we need resources to get on it, start putting water on it, rescue, search, all those kind of things, protect the buildings around it. All those things have to happen at once.
KINS, News and Information Time, is 8:19.
This is Destination Radio. If you're in business in Humboldt, Del Norte, or Curry counties, and if you've got the goods or services an out-of-town visitor or a family taking a day trip might need, then think of us as a kind of broadcast billboard, one that doesn't block the view of our beautiful scenery. Destination Radio is here to direct locals and travelers to the variety of unique and fun things to see and do in our area, and along the way, to connect you with them. Keep listening, and you'll want to make us your advertising destination. Destination Radio.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Ken Woods. Ken, the lightning fire strikes have been going on throughout the area.
Right.
It was intriguing for me when I went through the area around Mill Creek in Del Norte County.
Mm-hmm.
I counted 10 CDF or CAL FIRE trucks,
right,
following the lightning strikes that had happened Monday night.
Yeah.
Then on Wednesday, when I was coming down through the area, I saw them pulling what looked like a single-wide mobile home with one of their big old trucks.
Right.
And all I can remember seeing is Cal Fire hyphen, and I thought it might have said residential home. I'm not sure. Command center, something. Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of letters, but I was trying to keep it on the road myself.
Yeah,
so
yeah, it could have been a number of things. Up in the Bald Hills area, you know, we've had significant lightning strikes. They had a 20-acre fire up there in heavy timber that requires a lot of work, a lot of mop-up. Our agency, Humboldt Bay, has a water tender that's been up there for several days. We'll be there a couple more days. And then the fire that's burning currently in near High and Palm. So Cal Fire, you know, they're the experts worldwide. When they have a larger fire, they immediately mobilize their resources, and they'll bring in mobile kitchens that look like a giant, you know, mobile home type thing.
Really?
Command posts, the communications.
So all you need to do is hijack one of those things and sell it off, and you'd be okay.
It. You got it. That's it. We'll use one for the kitchen, one for the showers. Yeah, we'll circle the wagons. But those are the type of resources you see that are specialized, that Cal Fire is, you know, extremely well prepared and good at. When there is a big fire, they bring in the resources and then all the logistical support with, you know, how do you feed these people? Well, they have a mobile kitchen that's all set up with the stoves and the, you know, everything ready to go. And then the mobile command post where they can bring in a trailer and it has the communication equipment and the office and all those types of things to do the work.
So where do these things live during the normal times of the year? Is this Bay Area?
All over the state. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They're all over the state.
So they're not pulling out of Fortuna, this thing?
You know, Fortuna does have, I think the kitchens are in this county are located at one of the camps where they have the inmate crews, and a lot of them are staffed by the inmates that do some of the cooking and that type of thing. So, but Cal Fire keeps them all over the state of California, and when they have these big fires, they mobilize them and bring them in and set up camp. And, you know, another big component of that is just supplies. When, you know, you're on a fire and you break hose and you have those types of things, you've got to have the supply cache available, and they bring in trailers of supplies, and the firefighters come in off the line and they need something, they can quickly get that equipment and then go back out.
Hoses break.
They just burn through. They burn through when you're pulling hose and you're in a hot spot, you know, where you're pulling it over an area that's not visible fire, but the ground is hot, the burning embers, those types of things, you'll burn through your hose. You pull it over rocks. And then just the pressure a lot of times will break a hose because you're pumping uphill or downhill, a lot of pressure in that hose line.
So this is a specialized, must be a different kind of hose than what you guys have in the more developed areas.
Same hose.
Really? It's not thicker? It's not bigger?
No,
the joints
no,
are?
No, the wildland hose, in fact, is a little, it's a lot of times structural firefighting uses a double jacket type hose, but wildland uses a single jacket because it's so much lighter because you're pulling it, you know, you're carrying it, pulling it greater distances. So it's a lighter hose.
So if it breaks, I can't imagine you go running down 5 miles and say, oh, guys, you got to turn it off.
Yeah, no, you don't. You have a hose clamp on carry with you. You quickly clamp that hose, shut it off, and you have an extra piece of hose. You put that one right back in, open up your clamp, and you're back in business.
So you just kind of jack it over it.
Exactly, and just put in a new piece and right back to work.
An industrial version of those little things with the screws that we use at home for bee traps?
Yeah, not quite. No.
So with your rig out there,
right,
is that one of the... an example of an MOU or JPA or blah, blah, blah? Or is this now an opportunity where you're getting paid your rig out there?
We're getting paid. So we have an agreement with Cal Fire that when they have a fire, they need additional resources. They then pay us to staff our rig, whether it's an engine. In this case, it's a water tender with two personnel. So they've been out for several days. So we make a set amount per hour to pay for that crew and the use of the apparatus. So for us, not only is it an opportunity to help out our neighbors, which we want to do, but it's an opportunity to make a little money as well, which in these budget times is absolutely critical.
So that covers the overtime plus?
Right.
For the backfill?
Exactly. Yeah. So we're replacing people in town, but we're getting paid for that overtime to replace them. And again, we make some, a little bit of money on the actual apparatus itself, which helps out.
No, it's called shining the apple.
Oh.
Not on
sorry,
the apple.
I didn't come to mind there.
Unless you're thinking apple pie out in the kitchen again.
Yeah. Well, we're back to that.
Yeah. Is that overtime something you crank into the budget, or is that seen as pennies
No, it's pennies from heaven. You know, we never know year to year what the fire season is going to be. We don't pad our budget, so to say, speak, with this potential revenue because we don't know. So when it does come in, you know, obviously it's a benefit to us, and we'll see what happens this whole fire year. But, you know, we want to be able to help our partners out there in the state. Just like if we have a fire here, we want them to come help us, and it's critical. When we're overwhelmed, we need the support. Same for them, so we're going to do what we can. But it's great to get paid extra for it.
Do you have to wait a year and a half to get paid?
No, Cal Fire is Cal Fire is very good.
Oh, good. So they've got their budget.
They reimburse
units
very rapidly, so it's been, you know, within a month we've been.
Oh, yeah. So you don't have to worry too much.
No, they're. It's much better than the federal government.
I thought I'd give you a little opportunity there.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:30.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Ken Woods. Ken, no one is saying that this fire season is going to be a comfortable one.
Right.
Having fires in early June normally, the thunderstorms and stuff start in around August, September.
Right, or much later.
Yeah. So this can't be a comfortable development.
No,
for anybody in fire.
It is absolutely not. And, you know, we had a fire this last weekend just in the Elk River area. Not a big fire, but, you know, Cal Fire came in with a tanker and dropped retardant on it. We had the helicopter working on it. We don't get that normally this time of year. And here we are. Things, as you know, are not predicted to be any better when it comes to rainfall. All over the state, the fire service is extremely concerned. And, you know, the key is how do we get on these fires quickly, get resources to them before they grow in size. And when you have, like this past weekend, 600-700 lightning strikes with numerous fires, it's very difficult then to be able to get the resources to those locations and work on that number of fires. You know, you're going to pick and choose how you're going to fight. What are they close to? You know, are they threatening the structures? What type of timber? You know, what's the best access? All those kind of things you have to try to deal with and pick and choose which ones you're going to start to work on.
It really does become a priority.
Yeah, it does.
Or
a listing
by priority.
Absolutely.
Now, a couple of years, and I know the Forest Service got lit up over it. Let it burn.
Yeah.
And
right.
It did. And then it didn't want to be contained, and
exactly.
It continued to burn. Is that philosophy one that still exists and one that we're going to see this year?
You know, I won't speak for the Forest Service. I'm not sure
how about the fire community?
The community, I think at this point with the drought conditions, the number of dead and dying trees from, you know, bug infestations, those types of things, the conditions are ripe that those fires are going to grow extremely rapidly. And again, we want to try to put those out here locally as quickly as we can so we don't have those bigger problems. And we're seeing it this week in Higham Palm where, you know, they've got over 1,000 acres and a low level of containment. But, you know, that fire has already just grown quickly in size. And
the terrain is compounding.
Terrain, and then couple it with all the other stuff going on around. It just, your resources get spread thin, and you really do have to prioritize where you're going to go, what you're going to do.
Is there any thought that if the terrain is beyond a certain gradient,
yeah,
you just, sorry,
yeah,
it's going to burn, and we're going to put in a 2 mile fire break.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's going to be 50 miles away, and right. it's just going to go, and let's right. anticipate
you
know, it.
What kind of resources can you get there? So if you can't get fire engines there with crews, you can't get the inmate crews on the ground because of the you know limited access terrain, they'll work on them with the aircraft. But a lot of times you just look way ahead and you say, okay, where's this fire going? And then how can we prepare down the road to stop it? Maybe there's roads further, you know, miles away. Maybe it's a certain type of topography where, you know, things change and you can decide that's where you're going to make your stand and you're just going to let it burn till it gets to that point.
Obviously, that doesn't happen in the cities often.
No, we try to avoid that in the cities. We try to stop it and hold it and put it out. You know, in the wild land, you can use backfires and things like that to your advantage. In the cities, it's a little tougher to do that.
Yeah, the philosophy is frowned upon.
Yes, it is. Yeah, homeowners don't like to see firefighters setting their houses on fire. No, it's not a good thing.
Yeah, we'll let this block go. We'll fall back.
Yeah.
What about in the area? Areas like Cotton,
right.
like freshwater, that really aren't rural.
Right.
They still have the terrain issues.
They do.
But it's close enough that you know people see it and there is a thought that it could turn and get into a populated area. Is there a melding of that one philosophy, that one style, that one approach into...
It's kind of a combination in some of these areas that are more rural. You know, you may have the ability to set some backfires around a structure to keep the fire from coming right up on it. But at the same time, you know, you want to try to stop that fire because shortly down the road, you're into a neighbor's property there. So the bigger roads, those types of things are where we're going to make the real big stands that we can. And we're going to do suppression efforts on those individual structures out there to keep fire away from the structures, but it may burn some wildland, some grassland, those types of things, and you're going to pick and choose how you're going to fight that thing.
There's going to be, it appears, an awful lot of areas that aren't traditionally at risk for
right,
fire
right.
at risk.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make it easier, or does that make it more challenging? The easier I'm thinking is like along the bay.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of areas there where there's a lot of tree, scrub brush, that kind of stuff. And normally, mm-hmm. you know, it's so moisture-laden.
Moist, right.
Yeah, it's not going to do anything.
Yeah.
A lot of folks are saying, you know, these are the risk areas.
It doesn't make it easier. It just adds an additional component to what we normally deal with. You know, normally in this time of the year, you're training for wildfires. You've done some of that April, May in the areas you're thinking where are going to burn every year. Those are going to be the real, you know, hot spots, critical places where you focus in on. And now you add in these new areas that bring a whole new dimension. And again, it's a tax on the resources. You know, when you have fires in not only the normal areas but additional, then you're spread even in thinner, and they're happening in places that are inhabited with structures and more people, and the concern greatly goes up how you're going to deal with these fires and get them out quickly. And that's the key. And in the fire service, whether it's federal, state, local, you know, again, it's a reliance on each other to come help out to stop these fires as quickly as we can.
KINS, News and Information Times, 842. We'll be back with more from Mr. Woods.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
St. Bernard's has openings for new children in our preschool and pre-kindergarten classes. Hi, I'm David Sharp, president of St. Bernard's Catholic School. St. Bernard's Early Childhood Education Center, license number 12540-2277, offers preschool and pre-kindergarten. We're open year-round from 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call us at 443-7705 to schedule a visit.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 847. We're back, final segment of the week. Suffering through with Ken Woods?
Yes, ditto.
Yeah, I know. I thought I'd speak for you there.
Thanks. Burning through.
Yeah, just burning through another hour of life.
Yes. I'll never get it back.
Yeah. Where better to do it than right here,
right.
Huh?
That's it.
Oh, boy. So what does this summer look like? What is there anything What's the most draconian thing? Do you think that the state or the feds are going to shut down the woods and just say no hunting, no fishing, no recreating, no nothing, and we'll see a whole bunch of closures? Which kind of seems goofy because it's lightning strikes.
Yeah, it's lightning, but I think you will see some of those things when those fires start and we start to see those bigger fires, and they will close off areas. They will, you know, no campfires, those types of things will have to be put into place because, again, when those big fires are going, all the resources are there. You don't have anything else really to protect for other types of things that are going on. They're spread so thin. So I think you will see some of those types of measures. You know, we saw it with the drought and the state, you know, reducing the amount of water. We had a little relief, it looks like, paper said this morning, regarding the restrictions. But the state's going to do those kind of things. The feds are going to continue to do them. And locally, we'll see, you know, bans on burning that normally happen later in the year. Those are going to happen sooner. So a number of items that way.
What do you think about fireworks? Okay. Now, I'm talking to a fire guy that doesn't like fireworks.
Yeah,
so let's start with that. But do you think there's going to be some adjustments with that just because of the concern?
You know, that's a tough one because politically, fireworks bring in revenues for local communities when they sell them. A lot of nonprofit organizations sell fireworks. They depend on those sales every year. And you limit or ban those, that's the sole fundraising source for those folks. For me, see them shoot them off over the bay, put them on a barge, you know, those types of things. Keep them out.
Surrounded by water.
Yeah, is the best of both worlds. And then people can enjoy them, but there's not the hazard they bring with it. It is such a dry year, and it is so critical, I think. The banning of the fireworks in a number of areas is really the way to go, and you're going to see some of that. You know, just you need to have the prevention and proactive side of things. Otherwise, we're going to be in a bigger mess.
The drought regulations, the dry grass, et cetera, in all the homes or mm-hmm. in front of a lot of the homes, does that complicate anything for you guys in city, or is it because they're so small that
not,
it really is?
Yeah, not really in the city. You know, we have our normal prevention that we do where homes that have, you know, high grass and vegetation, we target anyway throughout the year. But it's not as big a concern when you're out in the wildland area and you have your house by itself and there's grass around it and it takes a long time to get there. You know, we're really depending on those people to do the work to protect themselves initially, and they're going to have to do that because fire resource is going to take a long time to get there if they come.
A weed whacker is pretty inexpensive compared
That's right.
to the West Wing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Got it.
Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Stay dry. Join us Monday morning for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out, make it a good day. Hug somebody else. See you tomorrow.